Warning, this podcast has stories of real-life events and true crime that happens every day. These stories may contain adult language and graphic or disturbing details not suitable for everyone. Listener discretion is advised. In our society, most people are content to go through their daily lives safely and peacefully. But our society is not always safe or peaceful. For that reason, some men and women answer a higher calling to defend and protect their fellow man. You probably know someone who is one of these people, or maybe you are one of these people. The ones who see and do the things most people would never want to. These things are sometimes heroic and beautiful, but often they are horrific and terrifying. It's these things they don't share about with other people. It's these things they carry with them, so you don't have to. But when they get together, they talk to each other about them. And they call these stories war stories. Welcome to another episode of War Stories. I am Tom, and with me is our new co-host, Chuck. How are you?
I've been better. Currently sitting
you're,
with
you're a cop, and you still have a job, and you're not retired yet, so you could always be doing better.
Well, here's the thing. Qualified immunity is might be coming to an end in California, rumors are spewing, but we'll see. But I currently have a big-ass knee brace all up and down my leg, and doctor's making me walk with crutches, so.
Well, yeah, you farted and fell down, and now you're paying the price.
Yeah, use of force, foot pursuit type of deal.
Yeah, exactly. So you can hear another voice here. We have our friend Mac on the show. How are you, brother?
Good. How's it going?
Good. And for the listeners, this will be a fun bit of trivia. It's not really germane to the episode, but it's a fun bit of trivia that Mac is actually John's brother-in-law.
Indeed. Yes.
Yeah. So Mac is married to John's sister, and we've been talking about having him on the show. We just, you know, scheduling issues and stuff. And Chuck was able to make that happen. So thank you, Chuck.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Thanks. But, thanks. You have some distinctions. You're probably one of the most educated guests we've ever had.
Oh, well, thank you. That's much appreciated there.
Well, because, you know, I was always taught that police reports, the cop who writes it and the sergeant who approves it are the two dumbest people that will ever read that report, because everybody else is a lawyer and a judge.
Pretty much, yeah.
And a coroner. So the two, if the defendant ever gets to see the report, that's probably the dumbest person to ever see the report.
There you go.
So tell us a little bit about your background, because the other distinction is that much like our friend of the podcast who's been on a bunch of times, Aaron, who was a firefighter and is now an ER nurse, you started out as a firefighter, but you are now a police officer.
This is true.
Yeah, tell us about that.
In college, I switched my my major from sports medicine to fire technology. Then from there, I ended up getting a degree in fire science and then going to a fire academy. And then from there, I actually ended up getting hired on with a fire agency up north. I worked for the fire department for about 10 years. It was a great career. I loved it. And, you know, nothing beats, you know, fighting fire and riding on a big red fire engine. But in the grand scheme of things,
paid to sleep,
pretty much. Yeah. You know, it has its perks,
that's right.
But just like any job, you know, it has its downs as well. And there are a lot of downs with fire, at least with the agency that I worked at. Near the end of my career there, I was kind of fed the Kool-Aid to come over to the dark side. And, and so now I'm working for the, law enforcement for 5 years now, going on.
Well, six. I would really call it the dark side. I mean, isn't that the other way around? That's what I'm always told when they're coaching.
No, dude, officers. We have the cooler job, but they have the better job.
You know, it's kind of one of those things where, you know, if you have two children, which one do you love the most? And I can honestly say, right, I can't give you a definitive answer.
Right.
But no,
well,
but
they have their pluses and their minuses.
Exactly. Exactly.
So you went to college and you have a degree. You have a pretty advanced degree, right?
I started out with an associate's in fire science, fire tech. Then I ended up getting a bachelor's in fire science and emergency management. And I just recently got a master's degree in public administration with an emphasis on emergency and disaster management.
Dude, you were going to be a chief somewhere someday.
You were. And guess what? You're going to hire me to be your protection detail.
And to be honest with you, the reason why I actually wanted to go with a master's degree was actually specifically for that reason. It's because I wanted to actually be a supervisor.
Be a chief. Yeah.
Oh, you're going to be on like Fox News one day. Just like the other chief of police that wears a cowboy hat.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Badass and awesome.
Why? Because
that's going to be you.
Racist.
Hey, I'll take it.
I mean, there's some similarities there, but that's not it. I mean,
no.
But I
no,
mean,
actually,
I would
being a sheriff is better than being a chief because you're elected and they have to impeach you to fire you.
This is
true. I don't think every municipal agency that has a chief of police. I don't always think that, a lot of them have charters where they're basically right under the mayor and they answer to the mayor. So basically, it kind of defeats the purpose of a chief of police. But I think some agencies out there, and I don't know, I'm just kind of shooting from the hip, that they might actually not be directly associated with the mayor's office, where they don't have to answer to the mayor and they can kind of be their own police chief.
Right.
But definitely being elected is better because you don't answer to anybody, but you're the people elected to you.
That is
so
true.
I can tell you, a little bit for California. I know there's some areas where the jurisdictions are weird, like New York, like the police commit. There's not really a chief of police. Like LAPD has the chief of police, New York has the police commissioner and then the police commission and all this other stuff. So jurisdictionally it's very different. And if anybody is listening and wants to come on and explain how NYPD precincts and commissions and all the comp stat and all that stuff works, we'd love to have you. But I could say for California, up until right after Daryl Gates, one of the greatest police chiefs ever to grace God's earth, they took away the ability for a chief to be protected by the basically by the civil service, the peace officer bill of rights, and stuff.
Right.
And they made it an appointed position where you got 5 years, and if you did a good job, they'd appoint you for another 5 years, but the max term that you would ever serve as chief is 10. However, my department, the chief of police was an at-will employee who reported to the city manager.
Ooh.
Okay. Yeah. So the city council, the city council that had a mayor, but it was not an elected mayor. It was the city council members were all elected, and then the mayoral spot would rotate, which some cities have. Yeah, they have a rotational mayoral spot. But because the city council doesn't administrate the city day to day, the city manager administrated the city day to day. So the city manager had all the power, not the mayor. And the chief of police reported to him. And if you pissed the city manager off, you could get fired. So how's that for political conflict?
It rolls downhill.
it definitely does roll downhill.
Now, Mac, you have a master's degree and you're a police officer. Do you think that having such a high level of education benefits you as a cop or patrol cop or anything like that? Or do you think only associates would suffice? What's your take on it?
Yeah.
So after working fire and now being in law enforcement, I would say yes and no, depending on what your objective is as far as law enforcement goes.
Okay.
Let's just speak on law enforcement solely for the moment. Law enforcement and education, a lot of it that I've learned so thus far has been a lot of just basically common sense.
Right.
I mean, what's right, what's wrong? Give them a ticket, don't give them a ticket, arrest them, don't arrest them. Do you know the law? Don't you know the law? Plain and simple. There's really not much inner workings or moving parts that really just make the job work. Now, if you want to go ahead and say, like, okay, I want to advance my career from a patrol officer up to, a sergeant, chief, whatever, then obviously some type of education, you have to meet the job requirements.
Right.
So it all just depends on your goal, what you want to do.
Right. I think that's a big, if you want to push a black and white around your entire career, then a degree is superfluous because they're going to teach you everything you're going to need in the police academy.
Exactly.
But special assignments. Yeah. Special assignments, promotions, things like that. You're going to want to start looking at education.
Right. The issue that I have is it does seem like there is a big problem in law enforcement. You can tell me if this is true in fire, but it seems that the degree does get weighted way too heavily, though, because you'll see guys that have really good street experience and really good knowledge and a really good base to lead the troops and to move up the ladder, but they get passed over or they're not looked at as favorably as somebody with a degree who, I mean, let's face it. I knew a guy at my department and he was kind of just a kiss ass with a master's degree in business, right, and public administration. But, you know, they were promoting him right through the ranks because, you know,
right,
he looked good on paper. Whereas, you know, those of us that had to work with him out on the street were like, this guy's an idiot.
Well, you know, that also comes with, you know, your training and who you have, you know, leading the way for you. For me, I feel like the education aspect of it has definitely helped to a certain degree. For example, when I started out in law enforcement, my very first day with an FTO, like, okay, we're going to go out patrol, we're going to go do our thing. Now, mind you, I went into law enforcement with zero knowledge of how to be a police officer. So I had to basically learn what it is to be an officer. But I could tell you anything you want to know about suppressing fire and rendering aid to someone and cutting someone out of a fucking car. So the first day, we're going out, we're patrolling, we're doing our thing, and we get a call that there's a guy that vehicle accident, a car versus motorcyclist. I guess the guy ended up T-boning a vehicle, getting thrown off his bike, and landing into a brick wall. By the time we get on scene, he's spewing out his guts. As we're standing around this guy and seeing him that he's leaking out of every orifice, I'm like, by the way, my EMT kicks in, and I'm sitting there thinking, okay, we need to get this guy on C-spine. We need to open an airway. Wait till fire gets here. At least he'll live. Well, a couple of the other officers that were around were like, don't touch him. Wait till fire. Just leave him be. Don't touch him. But right away in my mind, I already knew, like, help this guy. So, you know, I throw on my gloves, I C-spine the guy, or I hold C-spine, fire shows up a couple minutes later, and I let them take over or whatnot. They come back later and say that if I wouldn't have done what I've done, the guy would have died.
Right.
So a little bit of education does help. As far as responding to other calls of the nature, I just had to learn along the way.
And I would think that some of that, like, don't you think some of that is cops not being prepared? Like, I've never been trained to do C-spine, but I've seen it done so many times, and I learned basic first aid, and I learned advanced first aid in the academy. I don't know about you guys.
Right.
So they taught us how to put somebody and hold C-spine.
Right.
I think some of that also boils down to those police officers, for whatever reason, whether it's cross-contamination of bloodborne pathogens or just a general feeling of that's not my job or whatever it is. Some of that does exist where cops just don't want to get involved in the messy stuff when it comes to that.
The main thing that I realized, or why, at least with that incident, why officers didn't want to touch them was, one, they weren't EMT certified, and two, they didn't want any type of litigation.
If
the guy had any further damage because I decided to touch him instead of letting fire. So, but because I was EMT certified, I was able to work within my scope of practice to actually render aid to the guy so he didn't die. So that really puts me one step above the next person in doing my duties. And also, if I wanted to go to another agency, I mean, are they going to look at me, or are they going to look at a guy who doesn't have an EMT?
Oh, you definitely have, like, the education makes you very desirable to departments, for sure. Because if you've got a guy that's cross-trained in all these things, I can tell you right now, my old man, he doesn't have a degree in emergency. He has a bachelor's in fine arts, but he spent 10 or 12 years with LAPD basically pioneering emergency management and helping define you know, the incident command system that was already, you know, in place for fire, but then right. starting to expand it citywide and expand it into law enforcement, expand it into terrorism, expand it into riots, you know, those kinds of things.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
now you having a master's degree in incident command and emergency management, that's huge, because you go to be a chief of police somewhere, or you even go to be a captain or a commander somewhere. When the excrement hits the air conditioner,
right.
they can look to you and say, dude, this guy knows the incident command system. This guy knows emergency management, resource management, allocation of resource, you know, all that kind of stuff. Right. So I will 100% say it makes you education 100% makes you a much more desirable candidate to any department.
I would probably term it in the sense of it puts me in the competitive field.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because just because a person has the education doesn't mean they know what the fuck they're doing.
Exactly. No, and that's where the oral board and all that kind of stuff. Like, you know, you get a guy right, with a master's degree, he goes into the oral board, and the next thing you know, he's like arresting his mother and pointing a gun right. at his partner.
Right. So that's one thing that's actually kept me humble about, you know, having a degree or trying to be on scene somewhere and doing something, is that, you know, you're always going to be subject to learn something. So if you got to sit back and shut up and just watch, do that. But if there's some way that you can contribute, by all means, put yourself out there.
I also think you chose your degrees wisely.
You know, I was actually on the verge of debating whether I even wanted to do my master's. And literally the day that I graduated with my bachelor's and I made a decision to go for my master's, I literally signed up the very same day for my master's degree and started taking classes.
Yeah, because if you would have waited, you probably wouldn't have done it.
I thought not. No,
because you're tired of school. You don't want to go back. All that kind of stuff. Sure.
No, I was on a roll, and I said, you know what, fuck it, just go for it.
Yeah, keep it going. Yeah, keep it going. Might as well. Full head of steam. And I do think you just. I agree with Chuck. You chose your degrees wisely. And I will say this to the listeners: this doesn't. This goes even further back, because when I was a teenager, right? When I was 18 and I had my first apartment. And I remember it was a party call in our apartment building, and this was in, you know, suburbs of LA at a place called Van Nuys. And it was not a great neighborhood, but it wasn't the hood. This cop shows up, and it was kind of around the time where I was deciding if I wanted to go to college or not. And I had asked her, you know, if I should go get a degree in criminal justice. And she goes, no. I said, why not? She goes, they're going to teach you criminal justice at the academy. I said, okay, right. So what should I do? And she says, go get a degree in business administration or public administration, because right. that's the stuff they're not going to teach you. And that's the stuff you're really going to need if you want to promote. And I, right. that was the first time anybody had ever told me that the training for law enforcement to do the job itself comes from the academy and comes from in-service training and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But the broader knowledge base of how the rest of the world works and how that can work, you know, inside of the corporate law enforcement, the administrative law enforcement, if you will. Right. That was the first time anybody had ever told me that. And I think it does hold true.
I agree. If you have any inclination to just be more than just quote unquote a boot on the ground and just doing your job day in, day out, and actually want to promote and know what's behind the inner workings of what it is to run a department, then I highly suggest going out and furthering your education.
And you can do that while you're on the job.
Exactly.
You can do that while you're on the job.
Exactly.
So get your street experience.
Exactly.
And work on your degree at night. And then by the time you've got 5 or 6 years on, you'll have your bachelor's and you can start promoting.
You know, with COVID and everything and the social distancing and classes not being in, I mean, right now the platform is to get your schooling online.
Yeah.
And it used to be a thing where, you know, back in the day, pre-COVID, you know, get oh,
online got degrees were lesser.
Yeah, you know, people were talking shit. Now it's like, haha, who's smiling now?
Yeah, exactly. Thing, oh, you know? I did this before you did, idiot. I spent way less money. And let's face it, I had this discussion with somebody yesterday. A degree is a piece of paper you paid for.
Exactly. Right? That's literally because all it is.
It's literally a degree is a piece of paper you paid for. What you learn exactly. while you're getting your degree is up to you. And then what you do with that degree when you graduate is up to you. That's exactly. Why plenty of, you know, Elon Musk said plenty of idiots have master's degrees. Mm-hmm. You know? But let me ask you this then, because I know we're having you on to compare and contrast fire, and we'll get to the stories hopefully in a minute. What would you say is the philosophy on the fire side of things, as far as, like, I had a cop tell me, get a business degree to promote. You were getting a degree in fire science.
Yes.
And I would think that although fighting a fire is taught to you in the fire academy, Understanding a fire, like the actual fire science degree, would be beneficial in a lot of ways. But I don't know, like, if you were giving advice to young guys or girls getting ready to go into the fire department, what would you say as far as education?
Anything past an associate's degree for fire, then you're working towards being more than just a firefighter. You're actually wanting to be an engineer, a captain, a chief, battalion chief, section chief, you know, anything that has to do with any type of supervisory role. So if your goal is to move beyond just being just a regular meat in the seat firefighter,
right.
That's what we call it. You know, if shit happens and you're just meat in the seat, because, you know, fire burns, doesn't matter who it is.
It'll burn a chief just as hard as it'll burn a firefighter.
Yeah, exactly. So if your goal is to move beyond that, go further, get your bachelor's, get your master's, because those roles, they require a degree.
So it's about the advice is kind of the same. If you want to work, if you want to push a black and white, get an associate's in criminal justice and call it good. But if you want to advance, start looking at an advanced degree.
Now, exactly. Let me ask you this. Now you have a fire science degree, but then you can also go and you can get like an engineering degree to understand structures, understand how they're built and things like that, and load bearing beams and things like that. Now, do you think that like some sort of engineering degree would assist you, maybe not in wildland, but maybe in like inner city structure fires and stuff like that? It would help you better understand the fire and the dynamics of the fire and maybe the structure, so that you're not put in an unsafe position, or would that just be all on the job training that they would teach you?
So with fire, there's many layers like an onion regarding fire. So
onions have layers.
Onions have layers.
Onions have layers.
So an associate's degree in fire science, it gives you all those basics. Building construction, what the different tools and apparatus and all that shit like that. Once you move into the bachelor's aspect of it, now you're moving into mutual aid and how to actually manage scenes and multi-casualty incidents. What other agencies you work with.
Administrative side.
Exactly. You're moving more into administrative aspects. And then once you get into public administration, you really dive deep into the deep end of the pool of that administration aspect.
Right.
In the sense of like emergency management and city manager, stuff like that. So when you said you mentioned the city manager, that's kind of almost along the same lines in that aspect of it. That you're now playing a game of chess as opposed to checkers.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, you want to be a patrol cop, you're going out and playing tag, right?
Exactly.
You want to be a detective? Well, now you're going out and you're playing hide and seek.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You want to be a chief of police, you're going to have to learn chess.
Exactly. because now you're overseeing all those people.
Right, exactly.
So now you have to delegate what you want them to do, what you don't want them to do. Now you have to deal with your bosses, who are now the higher ups over you.
Right.
So now, you know, you're more authoritative figure.
So now let's talk about some of your experiences. I know you got a couple of stories from police and from fire. So let's just, the floor is yours. Let's get your stories. And then I would like to kind of get your thoughts on just in general, because here's one thing that fascinates me too, is there are public safety agencies out there. The one that comes to mind is in California, there's city of Sunnyvale. And when you go to get hired by Sunnyvale, you're hired for the Sunnyvale Public Safety Department. So everybody that works for Sunnyvale is both a police officer and a firefighter. So the police officers patrol, and then when a fire gets called out, somebody has to go get the fire truck And then all the police officers go and pull their turnouts out of their trunk and fight the fire.
So Sunnyvale must be a very rural area.
I don't think so. I think it's it's Northern California, but I'll have to look it up. But yeah, I remember seeing that. And I'm like, wait, all the cops are firefighters?
Well, check and this sure out. I competed in CrossFit for a while and did the whole police and fire games. And I competed with a guy. Dude was, I mean, he was a phenomenal athlete, just in really good shape. And he was both fire and police. But I think he was more of a full-time firefighter. But then check this out. He was on the SWAT team for the police department.
That's pretty cool.
So I don't know how that
was. So he was a SWAT medic.
No, like he was on the SWAT team. I don't know. He was like, he posts photos all the time of like in a black and white and going and doing stuff. So he may have been that role, but he ticked both boxes of police and firefighter out in San Diego.
So it's funny that you mentioned that. When I was actually working for fire, at some point in my career, I wanted to do arson investigation. And and what I learned with arson investigation is that at least with the agency that I was at, you're a firefighter. However, you get 832 powers. Yes. So now you're cruising around in a fire vehicle, and you know they issue a mini 14, and you're pretty much cruising around doing your job, kind of like the best of both worlds.
Yeah, so I was when I was training, I was an instructor for the state of California doing advanced officer safety, and it was mostly police officers that would come through, and we'd teach them traffic stops, like advanced traffic stop, you know, to deal with some crazy situations, you know, hostage scenarios, you know, active shooter scenarios, all that kind of stuff. Advanced, like it's more hands-on simulations training, scenario-based training than you would get in the academy. But occasionally we would get arson investigators that would come through and they had become firefighters, but then wanted to get into arson and they would go to an 832 course. They would learn, you know, peace officer powers to arrest, all that kind of stuff. They would have the gun, the badge, the duty belt, the whole thing. Yep. But they're basically a fire detective. And then, God forbid, it comes down to an enforcement action against an arson suspect. They can go after him.
Right. Pretty much.
And by the way, Sunnyvale is right outside of San Jose.
Okay.
Just next to Cupertino and Palo Alto, and has a population of 140,000. So it is not rural.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go.
Anyway, go ahead.
I guess start with fire. And this is more towards my rookie year when I first started in fire. So, you know, you're going through, and I'll remind you, you have your degree, you got your EMT, you read all about fire, you read about this shit, but you've never seen it in person. You don't know what a fire looks like until you're actually looking at it.
So, yeah, tweakers look a whole lot different on paper in the academy than they do staring at you 5 feet away, sweaty and shirtless.
Right. So we get sent out to however many thousand acre fire. And our fire captain, he trucks us into God's country in the back of middle of nowhere with all this vegetation around us. That's pretty much it's green fuel. So basically, it's gonna burn if a fire comes through here.
Right.
So he says, "All right, I'm gonna drop you guys off right here, and I'm gonna go up over to the other side, the other division of the fire, and see what's going on over there." And in my mind, I'm sitting there thinking, like, I don't know what the hell's going on right now. Like, I read about this, but I ain't never been on a fucking fire. I never seen this before. So as we get out the engine, and I'm kind of looking at my senior firefighters, I'm like, take it till you make it. So just do whatever they're doing.
Right. I just follow my chow time, sir.
Yeah. So the fire captain, as we got all our tools, we got all our stuff, the fire captain looks at us and says, "Remember your training," and then fucking takes off. And I'm like, hold up. So we're sitting here in this field and we're waiting, you know, the fire might come this way or it might flank around to another division of the land. Well, sure shit, We hear on the radio that the fire is coming our way and that we need to start a backfire to burn the fuel between us and the fire. So that way it doesn't just rip through here, up through here, right, kill us and just keep going. So here we are, you know, in a line, a straight line, a single file line, about 10 to 15 feet apart. And we have these fusees, and we're basically lighting fire of the unburned fuel and the fire that's approaching us. And behind us is just, for acres, just unburned fuel. So if you've never seen a fire come towards you, like progressing towards you, it is the most scariest, but yet it is the most beautiful thing you'll ever see in your life.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Fire is, and, it's a force of nature that's like, I remember taking the psych test, right? And there's a question on the psych test that says true or false, I am fascinated by fire. Well, okay, for those of you out there, the answer to that is no, right? You just, no, I'm not. It's fine.
No.
But the real answer is yes. Everyone is fascinated. I could stare at a campfire for hours.
For hours.
So when you get, I can only imagine when you get this wall of fire in the forest, you're like, wow. Also run. I mean,
it makes you realize how actually small you are on God's green earth.
Yes.
You know what I mean? But that's like I said, it's one of those things where you have education, but it doesn't mean anything if you don't know what to do with it. And a lot of that is experience. That was, like I said, that was my first ever major fire that I've ever been on of that magnitude. And
the chief was like, "You're on your own."
Yeah, he like verbatim. His words were, he looked directly at me because he knew that I was the rookie firefighter. He said, "Remember your training," and then literally it was like something out of a movie, just took off. And I was just like, "Holy shit!"
Like, that's the moment. Like Adam and I talked about it. That there's a moment where you drive past a wind, like a glass building, and you're black and white for the first time, and you see yourself in uniform driving a black and white, and you go, holy crap, this is a lot of responsibility. They actually made me, like, I'm actually doing this. Like, so
like, this, you get is real. There and, this is real.
Yeah. And your chief goes, remember your training. And you're like, oh yeah, I have to actually fight the fire now.
Yeah. Like, someone should call 911. Oh, wait a minute. That's me.
Right. Hey, do you guys, should we call somebody to handle this? No, idiot. You're the one we call to handle this.
Yeah. You're the guy. You're the guy.
Right.
But you know, ever since after that, you know, and the next 10 years of my fire career, you learn along the way, and it just gets better and better, where each fire that you go to, you just learn a little bit from each one and how you apply it to the next. So it was definitely a life experience that was worth living.
I still say I don't want to face off against fire. I've said this many, many times. I think I've even said it on the podcast once or twice. Fire is magic, and I can't shoot magic. You know, like, that is why I've never wanted to be a firefighter. But nobody ever told me that you would actually get to light fires and destroy stuff a lot, which that's fun.
Yeah, that's yeah. You know, when you get to cut someone out of a car, that's another experience in itself too.
Yeah.
You know, I remember, I mean, it's a quick story. I don't want to be too much on this, so we got a call right around the corner from the station that a guy had gotten into a car accident. When we arrived on scene, this guy had a pretty cherry 1965 Mustang that he all souped up and whatnot. I guess he gave it a little bit too much gas, hit the dirt, whatnot, the embankment, flipped his car over, and we had to basically cut him out of his car. And, you know, when you give someone a convertible.
Bye-bye Mustang.
Yeah, bye-bye. I mean, but the best part was, you know, as a firefighter, you're sitting there thinking, like, once they give you the green light to destroy some shit, you go ham.
Yeah, enjoy it. I would see the guys up there with the axes and the chainsaws ventilating roofs and stuff. You enjoy it. I look like fun. I'm like, can I do it?
Yeah, you know, you do your job, but you know, you have a little sense of fun and pride out of it.
Yeah, there's no reason you can't enjoy it.
Exactly.
I have never thought seeing a firefighter on top of a roof cutting ventilation holes going, oh, that looks cool. I'm only like, what if he falls?
Well, there's that too.
Now, that's the caveat, and you know, and that's where, you know, it's both sides of the fence, you know, in law enforcement. Yeah, law enforcement, and you know, you you run the risk of getting shot or shit kicked out of you by some shit bag.
Yeah, you know, I talk to the fire guys and they're like, I don't want to get shot at. I'm like, I don't want to go into a fire.
Right. You know, the last thing you want is to go into a fire, be on a roof and fall through that shit. And now you're screwed.
So now you spend 10 years in the fire department and now you've spent 5 years in law enforcement. What was you said you had a law enforcement story you could share real quick, because I wanted to get mindset differences from you. So go ahead with your law enforcement story you wanted to share. And we'll go.
Oh, okay. Well, actually, earlier it was the one with the guy in the motorcycle, but I got another one. So here I am patrolling, and it's pretty much the end of shift, and I'm pretty much ready to bring it in and go change.
Right, you're putting your blinders on.
Yeah, pretty much. Literally, like, yeah, there ain't shit going on right now. I'm just gonna post up right here. And then I'm going
to
bring it in.
This is the perfect time to run a stop sign in front of me, because I ain't going to pull.
Oh, even better. There's a freaking guy in a BMW, and he's literally doing about, I say, close to 70 or 80 on Surface Street. He's literally right past me, and then right through the red light.
Oh.
And I'm like, fuck, right now? Really? Right now? So, of course, you know, I turn him on, and I'm...
Yeah, you have to.
Beating feet down the street, you know, trying to get to this guy. And now, mind you, I'm still a rookie officer at this point. I guess this guy, he's going so fast that he actually pretty much loses me. And I guess he hits a side street and is hiding out in one of these side streets up not far from where I lost sight of him. And here I am with my lights and sirens wailing down the street. I make it all the way to almost the next city trying to look for this guy. And until a point where I run into another unit, and I ask him, like, hey, did you see a guy in a white BMW? Yeah, pretty much. He's like, he never passed me. I'm like, oh, shit. Well, what the hell? And at this point, dispatch is like, you can stop going code 3 if you don't have eyes on him. I'm like, oh, that's probably a good idea. And so at this point, we're getting calls from the neighbors in the neighborhood that there's a guy that was hauling ass up the street, and he's now on their street.
Nice.
So at this point now, I'm hauling ass back to the last known direction that we're getting the calls from, and we finally catch this guy. At this point, I'm like, you know, lesson learned, you know? You kind of learn a little bit, you know? If you don't see the fucking guy, stop going code 3.
just shut it down.
Yeah, pretty much.
Reduce.
So that's my little funny Mickey story for the
right. So how has your mindset changed, or has it, when you look at how you have to be as a firefighter versus as a police officer, because you've now had to live in both worlds? Do you find that you still that your mindset hasn't changed, or do you find that it has, or do you find that it there was no difference? How is that?
No, there's a lot of similarities in the sense of in each field, you're always faced with the unknown. No matter how much you think you have a handle on a situation, it's a constantly varying environment. It can change at any moment. It could change. You think you can have control on a fire. You think you can have control of a person or a suspect or a situation. And we know that, you know, you being in law enforcement, both of you, it could change.
Yeah, it can go sideways.
Yeah, it can go sideways real fast. So that's the similarities that I could see. The differences would be in fire, you still deal with the public, but you don't deal with the public directly like with how you would deal in law enforcement. So, you know,
fire guys are heroes.
Yeah. Well, you know, you show up to a call and you know, you're running a medical call for fire, or, you know, you're putting out a fire here or there, or you're getting a cat out of a tree, you know, quote unquote, doing the public PR thing. But you never necessarily deal with the public like in that sense, I would say, per se. However, in law enforcement, you know, you deal with people and you literally make a difference in people's lives because you have that authority in the sense of whether it's a good, bad, or in a different experience. You know, are you going to arrest this person or are you not going to arrest this person? Are you being more of a face for the department?
Yeah, victim, witness, or suspect.
Exactly. You know, like, you just want to, your goal or your intention is to be there to help people. But, you know, people see officers, especially in today's society, people see officers on in a different light, depending on where you're at, even though your intentions are always good.
Yeah, they used to see us in a positive light.
Right. So, so you know, it's different in that aspect of how I would describe it. But for the most part, I really do love law enforcement. And it's actually, I don't regret making the switch by any means.
Do you think there is a, because it seems to me there is a personality difference in firefighters and police officers, and that we're both, you know, there's a lot of military veterans who become firefighters. There's also a lot of military veterans who become police officers, but the types of people that want to go into law enforcement versus the types of people that want to go into firefighting seem to be different. And there, you're in that group that seems to be able to cross over. I had another friend who actually joined the LAPD, and he was a cop on LAPD. And the whole time he was a cop on LAPD, he was working at getting hired onto the LA Fire Department, because ultimately he wanted to work for LA Fire. But he also said, yeah, but if I stay with LAPD for my whole career, I'd be just fine with that too. So there is a small group of crossover. But do you see them as being two different personalities that drive you to one or the other? Or do you, having worked with both, do you think that it's interchangeable?
In my experience, I can't speak for a lot of guys that are teeter-tottering on one or the other side of the fence, or guys that have crossed over from one to the other. But in my experience, and having a little bit of hands in both, both fields are type A mentality. You just can't escape that. There's just no way. And
if you're not, this is not the right career for you.
By all means,
you're gonna get chewed up.
Yeah, by all means. If you don't have thick skin on either side of the fence, you're gonna get your ass handed to you.
Yep.
However, in fire, I've seen a lot of people that have gone from fire to law enforcement, and I've seen a lot of people that have gone from law enforcement to fire. And in my experience, I can honestly say that don't make the change based on thinking that the grass is greener on the other side. Mm-hmm. Make the decision because that's what you want to do, and you think that there might not be where you're at is where you don't want to be, because the last thing you want to do, whether it's fire or law, is get someone hurt or killed.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So if you for sure know 100% that you don't want to be a firefighter or you don't want to be a law enforcement officer, and that you might have a better experience on the other side, then make the decision based off what you know and how you feel about it. But don't think that, well, it's got to be better over there. It just has to be because it sucks here. And then just to end up being disappointed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
So let me ask you this, because you've been a police officer for 5 years now. And what do you think it's like being a police officer in this day and age, especially in Southern California?
Oh, wow. So let me put it to you like this. And this is a quick little just a quick little brief. So I'm a police officer in LA County City that happens to be African American. And so the I was explained one of both, I guess. And I pull this guy over in a I guess he was in some whatever, a truck or whatever. He ends up doing a traffic violation or whatever. And he says that I pulled him over because of his race. And I said, I'm not sure if you're blind or not, or colorblind, but I'm a black police officer in a city where there aren't many black officers. I'm basically a unicorn. So the last reason why I pulled you over was because of your race.
Right.
So
he He basically called you an Uncle Tom.
You know, he didn't seem. I've been called a sellout and Uncle Tom by my own race. Yeah, I've been down that road, but I think he was just trying to get out of a ticket, and it was more or less just a way to just poke a hole in this bullshit story he was trying to give me. But I just don't believe in that. It's a race thing. If that's the card that they're going to roll with, at least when it comes to me.
So I'm going to have I've got some questions since we've got you on that are through email from listeners.
Okay.
So the first one, it's a fire EMS question. So I thought you would be a good person to answer this. Alex Tidy. Hey guys, I'm a volunteer firefighter on a rural fire department in Michigan with my father and younger sister, and have a question for you guys or for your fire EMS guys. Our county just had a transfer of EMS coverage, and the new agency does not have an on-call branch like the last company we had. This in turn has made response times increase to close to an hour in my area due to them constantly only leaving one rig in the county and running transfers with the rest, including any and all rigs assigned to the three surrounding townships. Wow. That's
very rural.
Yeah. Very rural. We constantly have to request EMS from other counties to help, and we rarely even get EMS to come to fire calls. My question is, would it be beneficial for our area to try to do an MFR unit, and maybe you can explain what an MFR unit is, to help the people of our community? Also, the department in my area doesn't have deep pockets, so what kind of options do you think we could explore? I'm not wanting to do anything countywide, but we're just, our EMS service in our area is a problem, and anything we can do with the countywide EMS service. Thank you for the podcast. I enjoy listening and getting the different perspectives from all the different services. Keep up the good work, Alex.
Okay, so I'm not familiar with an MFR unit. However, when I used to work fire, we were kind of in the same boat where we would have one fire engine or one fire station that would be in a rural area that would service.
Medical first responder, MFR.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, okay. So there you go. All right. So the way that we handled it was that there were stations in those areas where basically if you response time to, let's say, from station to one house that was in the boondocks or somewhere, it could be maybe a half an hour, 40 minutes before you even arrive on scene.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of ways that we would combat that, or at least try to make the response times lower, would be to know who your civilian population are in that area. The people that move out to those kind of areas that are very rural like that, they don't want to be bothered. That's the reason why they move out there. So in order to at least help someone when they're in areas like that, it's always good to kind of have your area orientation available to cut down response time, so that way you're not 1 hour in response. That usually helps. If you know that there's an elderly couple that live down BFB Road, and just to get to that house is 20, 30 minutes just from that road, and that's after traveling 20 minutes to get to said BFB Road, be familiar with your area.
Right.
Because
that, as we used to call it.
Exactly, because that's going to cut down your response time dramatically. Another issue would also be having mutual aid with other agencies. Now, this is more in the administration aspect as opposed to just, you know, being
this would be something they'd have to talk to
exactly
administration about. But mutual aid it sounds like that's what they're relying on. Is they're calling other counties for EMS.
Exactly.
And so it sounds like they're having to invoke mutual aid on routine calls.
Right. And another thing that he mentioned was that his county doesn't have a deep budget.
Yeah.
So that obviously goes into, okay, you're not going to have certain equipment. You're not going to have, the response times are going to be low. You're now trying to service a community that's X amount with only the finite amount of resources that you have.
You know, what about a resident medic? Like, you know how you got resident deputies and stuff like that?
Right.
It might be worth looking into as far as doing a resident medic program where there was somebody in the area that had paramedic EMT training that was kind of like an on-call. And if there was an extended ETA, they were in the area and could be called out for those incidents.
So that is an option. However, you still got to look at the legal aspect of that. Anybody that's operating as a medic or EMT, you have to do it within the scope of practice of the medical director. And right. So the medical director oversees all EMTs, whether you're a paramedic or intermediate or a basic, within the said county that you work for.
Right.
So if you know that you're a medic and you work in this town, but yet this area of orientation needs some kind of help, what agency are you working out of? Who do you work for? Who are you working with? What type of insurance do they have? You just can't just be like, hey, Jim Bob, I need your help. My aunt fell and now she's screwed up. Yeah,
Bunny fell down the stairs.
Yeah, you can work out of implied consent, but still, nonetheless, if you're going to push drugs and oxygen and all this other stuff.
Yeah, you don't want to work out of implied consent for that.
Exactly. So it really puts you on a finite. I mean, don't get me wrong. Some help is better than no help. So if I'm in the middle of God's country, fucking help me. I'm down.
Do what you got to do.
But okay, God forbid if you help and, now Auntie sues your ass because you screwed up.
Yeah. Yeah. So this one's a little bit longer, but I wanted to read it. It's a firefighter stuff. So it's Chris. Hey, guys, I just wanted to send you a message to tell you that I think your podcast is great. Well, thank you, Chris. I came across it by accident in January as it popped up on Pandora as a recommendation. By the way, I just wanted to say that I got recommended this podcast based on the podcast I listened to.
That's awesome.
That's funny. It was
sniffing your own product or what?
So it's like, hey, you may like people who like this podcast also like this. I'm like, that's mine, stupid.
That's funny.
This just popped up in Pandora as a recommendation. Over the last 3 or 4 months, while I've been in my shop building new cabinets for our bathroom, setting tile, and out on the tractor, I have listened to, and as of today, caught up on all of your episodes. I have laughed, and I'm almost embarrassed to admit I've broken down and cried as I have revisited experiences and memories that have been tucked away in that spot where we file away the ugliness that we deal with. My wife came out to the shop one day, and I had been working with sawdust, and it was streaked down my cheeks from the tears, so I just told her that the sawdust got in my eyes. My day job is a high school agriculture mechanics teacher. For the last 10 years or so, I have been a volunteer reserve firefighter and now an engineer in a rural California fire department that currently only has one paid member, the chief. During the school year, I respond in the evenings, nights, and weekends when my pager goes off. During the summer, I pick up some shifts. Some of my best and worst experiences have been on the job with the fire department. While I love both of my jobs, if I were to start over again, I would probably go the route of firefighter. While I've not listened to a single episode of your podcast that I have not liked, I have especially appreciated the ones that involve firefighters and EMS personnel. Outside of the others on my department, I have no one in my life that understands what we see, what we do, or the camaraderie and bond we build with people we put our lives on the line with. Even my wife does not want me to talk to her about some of the stuff I see and do because it bothers her and she does not like to visualize it. I can totally relate to the firefighter you had on one of your episodes that was talking about being at a family event and having people ask him about the worst stuff he has seen or experienced. I get that all the time from students, especially. I usually tell them some gross story like the maggot lady, but sometimes I will tell them a graphic story and use it as a teachable moment, as I did last week when I had a student that was laughing about how he took a turn on a wet country highway this weekend, going about 20 over the speed limit and put his truck in a ditch. I talked about how many solo vehicle fatalities we get on these country roads and how one of my biggest fears when I'm coming out on these calls is that I'm going to find one of my students in the wreck. That honestly is one of the most difficult parts of being on a small rural department in an area that you live in. Many times patients are friends, neighbors, and acquaintances, and it makes things very personal. For some reason, I find listening to your podcast therapeutic. I feel a connection, and the experience goes way beyond entertainment like most podcasts I have listened to in the past. I also enjoy the lighter side the locker room brings from time to time as well. I'm sorry for rambling so long when my original intention was just to reach out and tell you guys that I appreciate you do, and I look forward to listening to more shows. P.S. Something I think would make a great topic is tunnel vision. I know there have been a couple of times that I have been in situations where tunnel vision almost ended up really bad for me. Putting water on live wires, not noticing a vehicle flying through a TC scene. It is something I always talk to the rookies about and is very easy to have happen to you, even as a veteran on the job. Also, I don't think my stories are nearly as exciting as some of your guests, but if you ever want to have perspective for somebody that works as a volunteer, I'd be happy to come on. Well, of course, I think having a volunteer firefighter come on, that's a huge, huge thing for somebody to do, is to be a volunteer firefighter, because...
Yeah, they're not getting paid for it.
Well, so they do get paid. Some volunteer firefighters get paid when they get called out. Right. Oh, okay. I did ask him, if I said, you know, that's amazing if you're not getting paid. He goes, no, I get paid per call. So he's, you know... He's not doing it out of the goodness of his heart solely. He is getting, you know, some monetary compensation. Right. But let's face it, I bet you he's not getting paid anywhere near what you should be for doing that kind of stuff. You know, that's a huge, the volunteer firefighters of this country, the guys that show up part-time, reserve, volunteer.
Yeah.
There is a lot of places in this country that would not have a legitimate fire service without guys like that. So thank you. And we always want to recognize the, especially people like, there are guys that are reserve police officers, and they have jobs as rocket scientists by day or lawyers by, and they jump in a car, you know, two weekends a month or 2 days a month and roll around and arrest bad guys. And I get it. It's fun, but dang, man, like you have to have a heart for service to do that kind of stuff. So I respect the hell out of those guys.
Yeah, definitely.
But definitely, I think we should have an episode just on tunnel vision, because, well, not just tunnel vision. We should do it on all the sensory exclusions, like audio, you know, audio, auditory exclusion, tunnel vision, you know, when your extremities start to go a little bit numb, you know, those kinds of things.
Yeah. It's a big thing. I mean, definitely. I mean, auditory is the number one thing. Like, you get into a crazy incident where maybe, it's like generally shootings, you don't hear the rounds. Like, when you're at the range, when you're shooting, bam, bam, in a controlled environment, it's loud. You're wearing ear protection. When you're out and all of a sudden you have to draw a weapon and you have to shoot, you know, you're not wearing any ear pro, you know, you're not going into it to get into a firefight or to shoot someone or to get shot at or whatever. But I got to tell you, getting shot at is probably the loudest thing you'll ever hear. But shooting at someone after getting shot at is the quietest thing.
Because you don't hear it.
You don't hear it. You'll have people be like, oh my God, that was so loud. And you're like, oh, I didn't hear anything. Right. You know, and then when you're, you know, rolling, I mean, that's definitely, we could definitely do a whole segment on that for sure. Because, like, especially when you're rolling in either in a pursuit or anything, you're driving fast. Sometimes you start focusing on the road, but you're zoned into what's right in front of you, not what's on the left and right of you. And that can be very detrimental, especially when clearing an intersection. Yeah.
For sure, sure.
That's why so many
driving code 3 is oof. Driving code 3 is one of the like, it's cool, it's awesome, I loved it, but it's so dangerous, and it, like, you don't understand how dumb most drivers are until you have to drive through traffic code 3. That's 100%.
Oh yeah. Now, Matt, I got a question for you, and this question is because you came from fire, and now you're PD. Do you think that on most agencies, whether you're big or small, it would benefit you or benefit most officers for being an EMT?
Yes. I personally think so, yes. Because
I think that's probably a good call.
Second portion of that is, do you think that agencies should pay for their officers to do so, because it's only going to benefit them, you know, whether FD doesn't get there first or it's a, you know, long response for FD, but you just happen to be in the air and you're there, but this person is going to succumb to their injuries, yet you could be there in treating. So do you think it'd be beneficial for the agencies to pay for their officers to become EMTs?
No. I think that if you have a background as an EMT, or you came over from fire to law enforcement to be an EMT, or you work for an agency that has, you know, some type of tactical medical response or SWAT or tactical medics and your agency will pay for you to be a medic, sure. But I don't think that an agency, whether it's small or big, to make it like a mandatory or, you know, thing to say that, oh, if you want to get your EMT, we'll go ahead and pay for it for you, or that we recommend that you go and get it. Because in the grand scheme of things, I mean, we carry guns. Bad guys carry guns too, or knives. As long as we can treat it with like some type of IFAC or something like that, and you could tell a police officer how to use an IFAC, then that's really all they need to know.
Right.
Stop or bleed.
My next thing,
would
be, as being in law enforcement for almost 10 years, I think that, you know, I agree with you that they shouldn't pay for everybody. I think they should give the option if you want to become
right. an EMT. I agree with that, yeah.
But I really think that they should spend more time, especially on a yearly thing or every 2 year update, on getting their officers up to speed on utilizing an IFAT kit, or how to properly apply a pressure dressing, or
I agree.
A steel dressing, you know,
for in service training or something like that. Yeah, right. Absolutely. Trauma right. training, all right. those kinds of things are probably something that departments should invest in. Maybe not right. EMT, but for certain like trauma wounds. Yeah, exactly. Right. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that that's one thing that our agency has sprang for is providing the officers with IFACs and basically trauma training on stuff like that. So if your agency these are for the people that are listening, if your agency has not issued you guys IFACs or has not at least trained you on how to use them, or you guys don't have them but you want them, really spring for your agency to put them in your, put them out there for you guys, or somehow work it into the budget.
And I'll tag up on that, and I'll say, if you want to promote, if you want to look good, if you want to like advance at your agency, and you're one of these people that says, hey, we don't have IFAC pouches, we don't have trauma kits, we don't have any of that stuff, write a grant.
Yep.
Write a grant. There are plenty of people out there. There are plenty of things online that you will look so good if you walk into your boss's office and be like, not only do I think we should get IFAC pouches and trauma kits for our officers, but guess what? I wrote a grant. We had a deputy at the sheriff's department in the mm-hmm. county where I worked. The deputy wrote a grant for every law enforcement agency in the county to be covered. Nice. Under. So it was one deputy who took it upon himself. He wrote the grant. They got the grant. And then every agency got a full-blown trauma kit for every officer nice. To put in their war bag. So that's super, it's something you can do.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Speaking of volunteer, I picked this, normally we have our guests decide to dedicate an episode to somebody, but I wanted to specifically, and Mac, we're going to have you on again. So I'm taking your spot real quick. I'll give you an opportunity in another episode. Spring Valley, New York. A volunteer firefighter died trying to rescue residents in an assisted living home that was engulfed in flames. Wow. He's 35-year-old, father of two young boys named Jared Lloyd. He was last heard from when he issued a Mayday call. It's about 2 weeks ago, I believe, at an Evergreen Court home for adults in Rockland County. I guess the community is called Spring Valley. He did not make it out of the building as it was collapsing. He gave his life in service while evacuating this nursing home. So I wanted to say to volunteer firefighters, we were just talking about volunteer and reserve firefighters,
right?
And so this young man volunteered to be a firefighter in his community and was rescuing elderly people from a nursing home when it collapsed on him, leaves behind two sons. So rest easy, Firefighter Lloyd, we've got it from here. Mac, do you have anything else you want to share? Or here's what I'd like to do. I would also like to have you back because of what you just said about pulling a black guy over as a black man and having him accuse you of pulling him over just because he's black is hilarious to me. I mean, it's sad, but it's also hilarious.
Yeah.
So if you wouldn't mind, I'd actually like to do another episode where we just talk about being black in today's culture, where police officers are just automatically assumed to be racist. So that'll be, and then we'll have you back for I think we should have you back for the tunnel vision and all that stuff. Maybe we'll deal with both on the same episode. Who knows?
Yeah, man, I'd love to. I'd love to.
Yeah. So I appreciate it. And then Chuck, you have anything?
No,
aside from a bum knee.
No, I think that, you know, I think touching on the whole IFAC deal, you'd be surprised on how big some agencies are, but how much they drop the ball on getting even like a tourniquet out there.
Right.
I think, you know, sometimes they may have them, but they get so big that they forget about, you know, you know, disseminating them against their troops and giving that shit out. I know from my personal experience that I have to, and a couple of us who have experience in applying pressure dressings, tourniquets, things like that, that we give hip pocket classes on when to apply a tourniquet, right, when to apply a pressure dressing. And, you know, if you apply a tourniquet wrong, you could hurt the person. And, you know, if you apply it at the wrong time, you know, it may be better suited for a pressure dressing. You know, I had a quick little thing. I had a guy who was EMT trained and tried to put a tourniquet on a friend of mine who was gushing blood, but it wasn't squirting. I was like, no, get out of here. Finally, I broke my tunnel vision. That'll be something we could talk about. But I ended up just applying pressure and stopped the bleeding. But
and knowing the difference between hurting, right. And here's I'll give you a couple of things, guys. It's really simple. There are some things as far as IFAC and trauma that you can do as cops and whatnot, or even just as EDC. You know, we got a lot of listeners that are into everyday carry stuff. Quick clot is easy to get.
You
can order quick clot on the internet. It you know, you put it on a wound, it'll help clot it. You can get Israeli gauze online, which is, you know, combat gauze that has been treated. So it helps, you know, to treat these types of traumatic wounds. But something as simple as what I used to do before they gave me an IFAC kit and a trauma kit was I carried maxi pads and tampons. And, you know, basically my plan was if I got shot, I had a couple of I could literally jam the cardboard tube into the bullet hole and push the plunger and take that tampon and it would expand in the hole. And then I'd slap the maxi pad on top of it. That's basically poor man's combat dressing right there. And
if it works, so it works.
If it works, it works. If you guys don't have that stuff, you know, so you're carrying a tampon in your bag. Big deal. You know, I guarantee you that the guy, you know, if you ever have to use it on somebody, a gunshot victim, or use it on yourself, ain't nobody going to be laughing. So it's just one thing you could do. Mac, I appreciate you coming on. Chuck, it's always good to see you. And for those of you that have been following my adventures, this is my first podcast from my new home state of Idaho. Let me tell you, freedom smells pretty good, people. I'm going to tell you right now. So I thank you guys for listening. I thank you guys for supporting us in all this and getting through it. It was a great 100th episode. We're looking forward to doing some more stuff. We definitely, Chuck, we have to do End of Watch because we've been promising it. So that's coming up here pretty soon. And we're going to have Ken back again. He was going to be here, but between my move and scheduling and stuff like that, Max stepped up and was able to come in and do this episode with us. Cause literally I arrived in town late yesterday. And then I didn't even know, what time. I told Chuck, I said, I'll have to let you know late Friday. So I appreciate you guys bearing with me, but I also appreciate all of our listeners. We really do dig you guys. And one of our listeners was, I said, hey, does anybody know what song this is on my little Instagram story? And it was Holiday Road from the Vacation movies. And one of our listeners sent me a private message, was like, hey, that's Holiday Road from Vacation. I'm like, you're the only person to actually answer when I said, does anybody know what this song is? So I'm sending him a free t-shirt. So you never know. Nice. When you see us on social media, interact with us because it may work out for you. Pretty cool. And until our next episode, come home with your shield or on it.